Hello and welcome to the Stretch Podcast. I am your host, Lebubule. The Stretch Podcast is a space where I share my thoughts on matters of personal transformation, emotional well-being, and spiritual growth. My teachings are largely based on what I've learned over the years, what I've read, what I've observed, and my very own personal experiences. The podcast is also a space where I have conversations with people whose work and life experiences has inspired me and helped me grow tremendously. People who are not only experts in their fields, but have open hearts, generous spirits, and they are teachers in their own rights. People who I call perpetual students of life. Here's another episode of the Stretch Podcast.
Welcome to the Stretch Podcast, a listening experience for self-improvers and stretchers looking to master life.
Hello, 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 guys. Hello, Dumelang, Tle Dumelang. It is another Sunday morning. It is I, Lebubule, your host, and it gives me great pleasure to welcome new followers on the podcast. And my guess is very, very obvious. It's obvious that the new followers are Reverend T, these people. I can only guess, because that's the trend we've noticed. Every time we get a new follower, it's usually after a particular episode. So welcome, Reverend T's people. Reverend T, Reverend CD, is a good friend of mine, a sister, a fellow traveler, a fellow spiritual seeker. So me and her are family, which means you are family, which means we are going to make the circle very, very big. And another warning, smallanyana warning, once you join the stretch pool, the stretch circle, you are hooked. I hope you do enjoy other podcasts. And may I advise that you also go back to episodes that are old. I did just over 100 episodes as a solo, because that's how the podcast started. It was a solo podcast where I felt I just wanted to share some of the stuff that I know, what I've learned, what I understand, my experiences, what I'm struggling with, what I'm wrestling with. So it was a teaching space, because I wanted to take my work outside traditional social media. Can you believe that social media is new, but now we talk about it as traditional, like Facebook is traditional? So I wanted to take it out of Facebook and just create a platform where you can also hear my voice, because there's something about the voice, the tone, the sound of someone that is completely different to when you're hearing them through text. So I am at this level. I wanted to get people to actually hear me, not just through my text. So go back, listen to those episodes. People love them. People absolutely love them. And speaking of people loving them, I don't know how to say this. I still get a lot of emails, and I can say a lot, because it's quite a lot of people who are still craving solo episodes. People who are regular followers, regular listeners of the Stretch Podcast, who are, yeah, they're liking the conversations I'm having with people, but they want me to go back to solo. Here's the thing. There is going to be another solo platform or solo channel that I do. We are still figuring it out with Tsepo, but this is where we are now. We are at a space where we are having conversations with people, and I'm surprised that I'm getting such emails. When if you start listening to my the solo podcast from episode 60 or even 40, I would always hint that I'm not going to be speaking alone. I am not going to be speaking alone forever. I will get to a point where we have a new season of conversation. So can we just all agree that this is where we are now? I know change is hard. I know some people are kicking and screaming. I know some people don't listen anymore. Hey, Marabato. Because, you know, they want to go back to, come on, just teach us. We want to hear your teachings. It's flattering. It makes me feel great. Or you really love my teachings. But this is where we are. Can we embrace the space that we are? The second thing is that you can learn a lot from other people. You can grow through other people. I am creating conversations so that you can find your other teachers. You need to grow. You need to develop a new muscle of listening to things, to expand your own knowledge. Otherwise, it wouldn't be called stretch. You can't. I know quite a bit. I don't know everything, of course. No one knows everything. But you have to stretch beyond me through my guests, which is why, my friends, that I always say, send us those voice notes. The new conversations with guests is a new territory for me too. I'm learning how to interview. I'm learning how to have conversations. I think I'm getting better every week. Honestly, I think I am, because I do listen to myself and I self-correct where I can. But I also want you to sort of help, you know, help me with your voice notes. Help me by sharing your thoughts, sharing your observations, sharing your what you've learned from the guests. Why I want you to do that? Because it will help me gauge more or less what kind of conversations work for you. And I'm not doing that so that I try and satisfy everybody, because that will never work. But I sort of want to see, which genre do you really actually like? Because if you noticed, I'm going far and wide. I mean, I've started with The World Without Wine, which talks to your overall health. I mean, alcohol is a drug, and it's a topic that I'm very passionate about right now. As you may or may not know, I am sober curious. I have not been drinking wine in just over 110 days, I think. And then we spoke to Casey about sexuality, talking to our children. Then I spoke to Mizo, Dr. Mizo. So there's been a wide range of topics. And it's going to get to a point where there's a bit of a narrow stream, because that's how it starts. It's wide and then it narrows down. So that's where you come in. So the more you engage me, the more you say, I really enjoyed this episode because of this and that. And then we sort of start getting some form of direction, or no, they like entrepreneurship, or they want the deep spiritual things, or they want relationships, or whatever the case is. And as time goes on, maybe we will even have different channels, because you never know. The sky is the limit. This is the time. This is information age. This is knowledge age. And, you know, some people like me are trading in knowledge. So I will give the people what they want, but the people have to tell me as well. Another thing I want you to send us voice notes is that I, like I said earlier, when we started the conversations, I want it to be an experience. I want you to listen to the Stretch podcast and feel like you've had an experience. Yes, you listen to me in my intros, then you listen to the conversation with my guests, but you also hear your fellow listeners, or, oh, this is how they saw this. Let it be an experience. Let us be in this together. And lastly, because I really don't want to prolong this, I want to get to the actual episode, and we have a voice note as well today. Thank you. So lastly, I want you guys to get into the habit of getting involved, of participating. You need to participate. The era of just receiving, and you know, I mean, if you listen to my solo podcast, you will always remember that that's more or less a theme that I always, you know, talk about, or no, get involved. If you enjoy someone, if you enjoy listening to something or reading something, develop a habit of letting them know, because you don't know how your letting them know changes and expands them. I get retlogeleng this thing ya go receive fela, guys. Don't just receive. Share with others. Share the podcast with other people. Send me that voice note. It's very, very easy. You go to the Stretch Podcast, www.stretchpodcast.co.za. And when you're on the phone, you just simply scroll down. You go to that thing, Eddie Line, it's a 3, and then you click. I think there's a voice memo at the bottom there. And you just say, Auslebo, I enjoyed your episode, listen, Banbani, for this and this and this reason. My question is this. That way, I send the question to the guest, and who knows, the guest might give us a clip only answering you, and we play that. Do you understand? Do you see what I'm trying to do here? Okay, so enough preaching. Let us play the voice note from Bulelo. Bulelo is a regular listener, and she is sharing an episode, the one that I did with Neo on entrepreneurship and spirituality. And I really enjoyed her voice note, and here it is.
Hi, Lebu. This is Bulelwa. I just listened to the podcast where you're interviewing Neo on entrepreneurship and spirituality. Wow. I don't even know what to say, hey? But my heart, I don't even know how to describe it. I don't know what the word is. Let me just say it resonated. You know, what he shared resonated. As in, we might not all be gifted in that way, you know, to be sangomas or to be prophets, or, you know, we all have our different gifts, you know. But I think there are certain things that are kind of values or principles or guidelines or philosophies, I don't know what to call it, that kind of apply to all of us, you know. When he talked about cleaning, he made me remember a movie called Limitless. I don't know if you've seen that movie. It's about a drug. I know you like Lucy, but it's similar to Lucy, a drug that makes people function at their optimum, you know, their brains function at their optimum. And one of the things that he starts doing, this guy, when he gets this drug, is to clean up his living space, you know.
You see what I mean? Thank you so much, Bulelwa. And yes, of course, I mean, I'm sure you guessed it. Of course I know Limitless. Those are my type of movies, eh? I remember Limitless. It's kind of old. I think it was released, if I'm not mistaken, before 2010. Around Boma 2008, I could be wrong, but I know it. It was this business person who took this drug, and he could predict things, he could come up with scenarios, his logic was whatever, but obviously the end of it doesn't end well, because, you know, the drug, in as much as it enhances him and his abilities, it's also killing him, you know, which is obviously one of the universal laws. There are no shortcuts. So thank you for that voice note. And my listeners, dear stretchers, this is the example of what I'm talking about when I say, let's make it an experience. Now I know, that spirituality and entrepreneurship in Neo's episode, which I still think it's one of the best, especially towards the end when he starts entering into spirituality. Yeah, it changes the game. And I want to talk about cleaning again. In my first book, Alone Book One, I talk also about how when I started living alone, because I had a lot of debt and I really could not create more debt, so I couldn't have a domestic worker. I think I had her part-time just to do my laundry and ironing. And I started cleaning my own home. It is true when they say cleanliness is next to godliness. Something intense happens when you pick up that broom and mop and start cleaning your own house. I remember I used to always feel renewed after cleaning, you know. And I'm sure it happens to you too, guys, when you wake up and maybe you start cleaning the house and then suddenly you want to clean yourself, you want to take a bath, you feel good. There is something deeply spiritual about cleaning. In the Zen cultures, when a new student of Zen comes in, the first things that they make them do before they teach them anything about the spiritual things, they make them clean the house. You clean, you sweep. You remember those long, big yards where they sweep and then they rake them. Something about cleaning. Even Matwasani in African spirituality, as Neo did explain it, there's something deeply spiritual about that. And hence Neo said it in the episode, when I was saying, oh my God, so we are outsourcing something that we should be doing. And of course, I know we're living in modern times, we are busy, we do need help, our part-time or full-time domestic workers. But from time to time, my friends, from time to time, take the time, and tell me what how that felt like. You can voice note me. You see what I'm trying to say? See what I'm trying to do with you? So thank you, Bulelwa, for that voice note. A little bit of a promo, nothing really major. Stay tuned on the website, on the newsletter. In August, there's a seminar that I will be hosting. I can't give you too much details now because I'm still in conversations with the panelists and the people who will be part of it. It's going to be online, of course. It's going to be a Zoom seminar. If you've subscribed to my newsletter, you will know immediately because I'll talk about the seminar, what it's about next Wednesday. So look out for next Wednesday's episode. There will be article. Yeah, I'll be talking about what the seminar is and who are the guest speakers and what we're going to cover, how much it is and how you pay for it. Very, very seamless exercise. It's one of those click, click, click. Immediately when you click coming, you'll be sent to a form and you'll fill in your details and then you'll pay via PayFast and then you'll get an email with the program. Very, very simple. And then we are doing, so it's an August event. So look out for that. It's going to be over 2 days because I will never keep you on Zoom for more than 4 hours. There is no way I will do that. I've attended a few Zoom conferences and honestly, it's very different to being in the actual room. If I'm at Sandton Convention Center, I can stay there the whole day and go through a conference. But it's different online. Online, you really just want maximum, like maximum of the maximum, 3 hours, nothing longer. It's because energetically it's very different because you're just sitting out there. You know, there's no proper energy exchange. It's there, but it's not like you being in the room. And also being in the room in the conference center is an experience. You know what I mean? You are outside your home. So there you are huddled over on your laptop or on your phone in your bedroom or wherever it is that you watch your Zooms and you're going to sit there for 6 hours. Never. So it will be about three speakers. If it's three speakers, just know it's going to be over 3 days. Or if it's 4 speakers, it's going to be over 4 days. We'll just space it out nicely and just look out for my newsletter. Now, let's take a little break before I introduce you to the guest of the day. Our conversation is entrepreneurship, the good, the bad, and the ugly. Let's take a break quickly.
If you enjoy the Stretch podcast and want to support us, you can do so by sharing any episode with your friends, family, or colleagues. You can send Lebo a voice note with your thoughts, questions to the guests, and overall commentary. The voice note option can be found on our website, stretchpodcast.co.za. You can also contribute any amount of money via Stretch Podcast Support, found on our website, stretchpodcast.co.za. Simply click on Pod Support. Thank you.
Ooh, okay, first of all, disclaimer. Nozibele Zondi is my friend. She is my proper, proper friend. So in the conversation, you will get that sense. You will get a sense that you're listening to two friends. But we are not self-indulging. So it's not like you're listening to two friends over coffee or at Tasha's. We are sharing a conversation with you, but you can tell that, okay, these are friends, so the laughing, the giggling, the inside jokes here and there, but like I said, it's really not a lot. The content and the conversation itself, it's deep, it's rich, it's vulnerable. Nozi made herself very vulnerable, and it is very, very insightful, especially for entrepreneurs of my generation. By my generation, I mean people who were born in the 70s and early 80s. And why I say my generation is because, and it's something I thought about after the conversation with Nozi, is that my generation, ne, people who went into entrepreneurship in the early 2000s, late 90s, early 2000s, like me, because I went into business in 2004. I think I was 25, 26. And the truth is that I am a first generation entrepreneur in my family and in my peer group in general. When I was an entrepreneur, when I was doing office furniture, exquisite interiors, I did not know of any other entrepreneur who was around my age group who was female and who did what I did. I knew a lot of entrepreneurs who were older, but they were also a different era. But also in Diluhabe, you see, I'm struggling to find names. The point I'm trying to make is that anyone who was my age was a professional or was employed or was doing something that is not entrepreneurship, right? And I'm telling you this for a reason. If in the conversation you feel as though Nozi and I are traumatizing you, it is because our generation were really deeply traumatized by entrepreneurship for many reasons. If you really want those reasons, you do want to pick up my book, because I don't want to talk about that. The interview was for Nozi, but I just wanted to put it in context that she's going to share a lot, and I also share, because it is a conversation, of how tough it is and how bad it was for us. And it's not so that we scare you, people. I know a lot of young people listen to the podcast. It's not so that we scare you. It is the context where we come from. We were first generation entrepreneurs. We had no examples. We didn't know what we were doing. And we compared ourselves unknowingly with the people who were earning a salary. So for an example, here's an example. And Nozi talks about it in the conversation. An example, you leave your job, you've saved up some money, and in your head, you're saying, no, I've saved up some money so that I can pay myself a salary. Already our mindset is still stuck on employee mentality while you are starting something new. And that was not because we were being dumb. We didn't know actually that this path is different. So a lot of us who went into entrepreneurship and oh my God, I'm so tongue-tied today. Who went into entrepreneurship didn't know what we were getting ourselves into, which also tells you why a lot of people who did the MBA, you know, there was an MBA era at some point, everyone was doing an MBA, never actually go into business. Have you noticed? Because now they know the risks. So Rona Radaiva, we dived into the deep waters, not knowing, and we had to either swim or sink. We drowned a little bit without dying, sank, came back, failed, came back. So it was a very traumatic experience. I know younger people, you know, Tsepo, for an example, my producer, and some of the young entrepreneurs I follow on Instagram, their experience is slightly different because they entered in a different era. Okay, so listen with that context in mind. However, the overall principles of what it takes to be an entrepreneur and how to succeed as an entrepreneur remains the same. It remains the same. It's just that the bruising seems a bit harder for us, for people like me and Nozi. And Nozi is even younger than me. She was born in the 80s, early 80s, I think 1982, 83. Or is it 88? I don't know. All I know is that she's way younger than me. I was born 1976. So we cover the, literally like the title says, we cover the good, the bad, and the ugly, but we start with the ugly, and then we talk about the bad, and then we share experiences, and then she shares, it's mostly about her, because I'm in conversation with her. So she shares deeply. She gives pearls of wisdom. She opens herself up to us. I mean, I was listening to her and thinking, oh, you know, I have conversations with Nozi all the time, but I had her differently because, you know, I suppose because of the platform, because the platform will change how you articulate certain things. Like I say, it wasn't a coffee discussion at Tasha's. It was a conversation on a platform meant to help, meant to inspire, meant to give you hope as well. Because at the end, towards the end, when we talk about the good, you know, because she's been in business for 10 years. She's been an entrepreneur for 10 years. If it's 2020, it means she began in 2010. And it's been, oh my word, you will hear it. So let me not spoil it. But I do want to read her bio like I do. She might be my friend, but I have to read her bio. And it's longish, but I will read it as it is. Nozibele Zondi is a self-motivated, goal-driven, and passionate entrepreneur who, in the past 10 years, founded Nubia Advertising and Promotions, Nubia Domestic Worker Placements. I remember that one, by the way. Yo, she worked hard, and she talks about it in the conversation as well. As well as Tribes Cosmetics. So do you see what I'm talking about? She has three businesses under Nubia, okay? her natural flair for entrepreneurship, as well as lessons learned in the corporate, where she occupied various positions in media sales in companies such as Prime Media, YFM, MediaMark, and the big SABC, to mention a few, has contributed immensely to her staying power. She believes that ongoing education, self-development, and keeping up to date are necessary to survive the ever-changing world of entrepreneurship. My hand is up. There is no other way that you can survive entrepreneurship unless you keep learning and re-educating and reinventing yourself. Two quotes she lives by are, "The tragedy of life is not found in failure, but complacency." I actually don't remember who said that, and I forgot to ask it. But anyway, asiko lapo. And another of her quotes is, "Do what you love and you'll never work a day in your life." Again, I don't remember who said that quote, but I know the quotes, both the quotes very well. Without further ado, my friends, let me introduce you to my friend, Nozibele Zondi.
Welcome to the Stretch Podcast.
Hello, my friend. Okay. It is very weird to interview people like you because we chom am. It's like interviewing with wongs. You know, it makes me all nervous. But how are you doing? You know, it's very difficult for me to start conversations without asking Abba and Uba, how are they coping with COVID-19 and this lockdown? How are you doing?
All right. It's actually strange for me as well. The formalities and all of that. It's like greeting you with good afternoon, Miss Pule vibes. But anyway, like we gotta do it. I'm good, my friend. I'm good. Durban is lovely. We still have beautiful weather. Blessings of beautiful weather. COVID-19, we're just rolling with the punches. We're just getting on with the program.
And the child, I know you guys, we are struggling, like Western Cape. People are striking. They don't want schools to open. Your son is in grade 7. How's school?
Yeah.
How's school? Is at school, is everything fine there?
Look, my son is coping. He didn't like being at home at all. I think I underestimated the difficulty that is the homeschooling. I always thought I was ready and I could do it until COVID-19 came and I had to like really do it on a full-time basis. So also my child is an extrovert. So he loves his friends. He missed his teachers. You know, he's a leader. He loves attention. You know, he's a monitor. He just loves telling people what to do and, you know, being asked for things. So he really missed school. He missed sport as well because he's quite sporty. Mm-hmm. But they can't do the sport. So we've adjusted. It feels like there was never any break. You should hear his vocabulary when he talks things like they say it's the new normal. He's adjusted. I'm just happy that I didn't allow the fear to keep him at home. And I allowed him to go back to school. So, but it's also a small school. They've got the grade 6s joining them next week. So, yeah.
Okay. No, Tina, it's the opposite. It's actually, it's surprising me how well Tau adjusted to homeschooling. So much so that we have decided next year we are enrolling on some homeschooling program. Uta Uyamazi, he flourished. Mm. He's done so well. And Nami, homeschooling, I don't think I was going to be able to do it. I'm grateful to Utamia, Wonga's daughter. She's teaching him. But anywho, Nozi, you know, you and I have been entrepreneurs. I mean, I met you at an entrepreneurial event. I was a speaker, you were an audience, and you were one of the very few audiences that after my talk, you came to me and you spoke deep things. You didn't want to take a selfie. You didn't want to do all that. And you said to me, "Leb, you are one of the first people that is describing my experience as an entrepreneur," and we hit it off. I think when was it? I think it was
2011 or 2012.
And we hit it off, and we've been friends ever since. So it's really weird talking to you about entrepreneurship, but it's also great because I know that you know what you're talking about. So here's what I want. Maybe take us through your first journey or your first taste of entrepreneurship? Don't tell us it was a girl. I was 7 and I started
selling sweets at school.
Yeah, when you tasted entrepreneurship, and then we'll talk as per the title of the topic, the good, the bad, and the ugly of it. So over to you.
Look, strange enough, at the time when I met you, I had only been 2012, I had only been full-time in business for 2 years because I went into business. I resigned from corporate in 2010. Yeah. That makes it 10 years later. I feel so old, but anyway. So it was a very interesting phase that I was going through. You know that phase when you just are collecting information as much as you possibly can because you also are trying to navigate around this entrepreneurship space. You don't know what is working. You don't know. Sometimes you don't even know what you don't know.
Any
information. Yes, any information is just valuable because I think while I was still in corporate, I went through the whole process that I think most entrepreneurs go through where you're flirting with this idea, but because you believed that you had to study and then after studying, get a job and then get more allowances, you know, have cell phone allowance, have more medical aid, have your car allowances, have, you know, those nice things that come with being employed. Yeah. And, you know, they were so attractive knowing that, okay, fine, you are credit worthy and you can buy your first car and things like those. So, but what I didn't know was that that process on its own was actually going to be the reason why I took longer. So while I was in corporate, I was just busy like trying to find ways because once you've got all these responsibilities, you start thinking, okay, fine. Let me then now go to business with guarantees. Yeah. And you call it calculative risks because you don't want a situation where you would have to build something without an income. Yeah. And that is when I then went and I started exploring things like franchising, because in my mind, the fact that there's money that's exchanged, it looked like less risk than having to do a business that is in services where you could go for like a couple of months without billing. So the money coming in, I didn't even know that you've got to break even, that money that comes in, it's got its own things that are allocated to it. You've got to pay rent, you've got to pay the staff and everything. But nonetheless, for many years, you know, I registered the business. I started looking for partnerships because, of course, I thought I could get things like the free ride, a company that has already yes. been set up. And BEE was a big thing at that time. I'm young, I'm black, and I'm thinking, okay, fine. If I approach a white-owned advertising agency, then I can always negotiate and say, okay, fine, let's just then be partners, things like those, because in that way, there's finances, everything. You're looking for security, but that's all because you don't want your lifestyle to be affected in any way. Yes. You don't want to build from scratch. You want to keep your car and everything. And to be quite honest with you, even when I resigned, in my mind, all I knew was that I'm going to live exactly the same lifestyle. I'm going to have exactly the same things. I will just pay myself more money. I didn't know. I thought that everything was just going to be fine. I would just own my time and I would do all of the things that I was doing. But I would just have more time. I would have more money. I determined my own paycheck, so to speak. Yeah. So yeah, that was just the initial stages where I then would attend even things like seminars, anything. Like, I mean, I think I was fairly new even on Facebook. If I remember very well, I must have joined Facebook in 2008 or 2009. So, you know, Facebook friendships were big then. It was about who you associated with because they would say the right things that appeal to you. They would have the nice events to host. And that is how I got to find out about the event where I met you.
Yeah. Isn't it interesting, Wuthi, people who don't understand entrepreneurship at all will always say to you, no, you know, you must save up so that you can pay yourself a salary. And entrepreneurship is not about paying yourself a salary, at least not in the first 3 years. It's about building. Yeah. It's about building whatever it is. And we all made that mistake. And so when we met, of course, after you joined Facebook and at that event. What is it about my talk that made you say, yo, entrepreneurship is real? Yeah.
Look, for me, the talk was real. It was raw. I felt like I was listening to myself talk, though you were the one at the podium. You were the one who had the mic. But I felt as if you were narrating my story because even though we've got backgrounds that are different. Like I came from corporate and everything. I always say that I draw great lessons from my time spent in corporate, but it still does not prepare you for running a business completely. I always say that corporate get given a job description. It's like looking after a child that is not yours. And when you go full-time to business, now you are a full-time parent to this child. You can't have moments when you say, I'll take the child back to the parents and that sort of a thing. So what actually moved me about your talk was that you were sharing my story. Yeah. Our stories were so similar. And more than anything else, I think I understood the kind of business that you were in because one of the companies that I once worked for, they were a sales house, in the media sector. So they were a sales house. So I thought, oh, wow, this can be done outside because for me, with the experience of having worked in that company, it was within my industry, but I still thought, selling media, you can't just have something like that. You need it. It's capital intensive in my space. So there was so much, but I think just in the way that you delivered the talk, it was just so genuine. It was just so, there was no motivation, things like you didn't read from a book. I don't even remember if you actually had a presentation. Yes, you did have a presentation, but it was exactly what I needed at that particular time. Yeah. Considering where I had been, because I went to business in 2010. 2010 was a breeze. I mean, we had the World Cup.
Yes.
It was a breeze. It was honeymoon period. I still had a bit of savings from the last job that I had at the SABC. And I still felt like, I've got this. A couple of few bad months. I actually didn't even realize that I was not even doing that badly.
That well.
I was doing that well. So I was cushioned. I was still okay 2010. And 2011, then the reality started hitting. Mm. Or 2012, now I knew that, okay, fine, this thing is real and it's not as easy as I thought.
Yeah. I think why my talk was moved is because I was doing it for the second time. Like you, in 2010, I had started the sales business, the LPBN. And the way I was so sure witty, people will love this because it was a brilliant concept. And I remember you loved it, which, Norman, out of all the sales courses that you've ever attended, mine spoke to your heart after when we became friends and we started working together. But the market was not ready because I remember what I was doing was I am going to take an entrepreneur and help them understand what sales is. If that entrepreneur already has a team, I will then work with the sales team and help them understand the entire 5 stages of sales. It was solid, but the market was not ready. The entrepreneurs I was going for, Bibanganamali, corporate would never ever. So I was already feeling the realities of, oh my God, a second business is going to fall again. Ekbenuguti, I had the furniture before that. So my talk, I was speaking from reality. And what's funny about it is that you were the only one that was moved. When I know Rosh, because I met Rosh there as well. No Rosh Mambo. I'm so Rosh. everyone else didn't want to talk to me because I was talking about how your money is going to end, the savings are going to end, you're going to lose your car, you're going to lose your home. Can you talk us through those trials, Izako? What did you lose when reality hit?
You know, Lebo, I think everyone that goes to this does not want to hear that you might lose. And even if they can hear, there's certain lessons that you just cannot comprehend if you have never been in that situation. You've got to go through it for you to comprehend. So I get where they were coming from because while I was still employed, one of the things that I did is there's a franchise that I eventually invested in. But I didn't get dented by the fact that I lost money and things did not work out. Even if I did feel the dent, but I still had the salary, you know, I still had the salary. It never actually kicked off, but that's a story for another day. I think I did mention it before to you. So no one wants to hear that kind of real talk because I suppose sometimes it comes across as negativity and it doesn't ended with a good story, that, okay, fine, despite what happened, this is where I'm at. I have overcome. I have gone through it. Look, for me, like I said, the beginning was, it was honeymoon. And then I went from honeymoon to the reality. But now, even with the reality, I was still hopeful. There were so many things that I didn't know, about. But as soon as the reality started kicking, one of the things I had was a car that I had bought on residual. And now, mind you, it was my second car, but I mean, it was as good as my first car because I know that I bought my first car when I was like very junior. I didn't even have my finances in order. I've always worked in media sales, so I've always needed a car. So I bought it using my brother's name. So I didn't really, couldn't remember the details and everything. You know, I didn't even know that it was my right to negotiate things like the interest rates and everything. When they said, okay, fine, you qualify and you could consider residual, I just trusted the salesperson. I didn't even know what that means in detail. So I have this car. I also bought like a house, my house from a very, like very early age. I bought my house at 23 because I had this friend who was a banker and she was very like disciplined with finances and everything. And she always said to me,
I know her. You spoke to
Uloli, me. Uloli, yeah. She always said to me, you know what? You're wasting money renting. So literally after sharing a townhouse with her in Welterfreden Park, I was ready to buy my first house. Now, you get into all of these things, and they came so easy because I was one of the fortunate ones that, like, after TCR, I got into internship. So I had a perfect path from internship. Then I got employed full-time, and, you know, I was creditworthy and all of those things. I was literally the target that marketers sit and discuss and talk about and say, okay, these are the people that we're targeting. I was that attractive. Yeah. So I had the house, I had the car. But by the time I was resigning, remember that 2008, we had the worst recession in the country.
Yes.
So 2008, I'm there. But I also had this franchise where I lost a bit of money. So even though I had my house for like a couple of years, I would, you know, skip payments here and there, but I thought I'm still okay. I'm still fine. The salary gives you the fact that you have the 30th to look forward to.
And that's it what gives you that one. False.
Yeah, it gives you that false sense that you are okay. So if I look back, my troubles actually started way back, more 2008, 2007. And strange enough, at that time, I was with my child's father. He was in business. He struggled. So obviously you're living together. You all try and assist each other because you are hoping that, okay, fine, something is going to come. There's a deal that he's working on. And he was in financial services. He was hard hit. Now you ask yourself, but why didn't Nozilen? Because she already back then stayed with someone who was in business. It was not my baby. I knew his struggles were there, but for me, I was just like so focused on climbing the corporate ladder and everything. And I could afford, I mean, when groceries had to be paid, I could pay the groceries, and I knew that, okay, whenever his money comes in, I was not bothered. But yeah. I would, as a result of that extra responsibility, then I would skip on my bond payments here and there. So when I was in business full time, now I'm no longer credit worthy because I don't have the pay slip. I don't have the 3 months bank statement that says this is the amount of money that I'm getting. Yeah. Now, the bank comes for me and says, okay, fine. You've got this balloon payment. Your term has ended. I tried everything to keep it, held onto it. A car that's over 5 years, I mean, I had a BMW. So a car that's over 5 years, you know that you start getting problems.
Yes.
Now, I've got this installment that I have to arrange. I've got these things that I need to fix. And it was just a mess. Yeah. I tried, I ran. I got to a point where, like, I would be driving into my complex when I see a car that I don't know. Then I would start thinking, it must be these guys. They are coming for me. They are coming to fetch this car. And I would turn. I became like this, you know, when they say, let me quote the Bible. There's a scripture that talks along the lines of, like, what when you owe someone, you become their slave. Something like that.
Yes.
You can see I haven't been to church in a very long time. But that resonates with me because I was literally like so scared of this thing happening and, you know, losing things. Until one day I got a call and they said, we know which child your security told us in your complex, which child your school goes to. And my child was still at crèche then. And we will come there. And I could not bear the embarrassment. I've got a very imaginary mind. I started imagining the whole scene like it was in a movie. And them, you know, just, you know, taking out guns and taking the word repossession had another meaning in my head. And I was imagining them just taking the car, big scooter, and, you know, and then getting my child out of, and, you know, I laugh at it today, but it was traumatic. It was a traumatic experience until I gave them and I said, okay, fine, take your car. I do not have this. There's no way that I'm going to refinance because anyway, I would never qualify for another finance. I don't have a stable income that comes. I had no pay slip. I don't have regular income that comes every single month that can guarantee. Then they took it. Then I was left with the house. Now, you know, with defaulting here and then everything, the same process that I went through with the car, it followed with the house. It was on and off negotiating this and that and that until I said, you know what, Nozi, what is not yours? As long as it is not paid for in full, that simply means that it is not yours. Let it go. At the time, I was very weak emotionally. I think I would have reacted better if I was where I am today. But for me, it felt like my world had crumbled. At the time, I had even broken up with my child's father. Another story for another day. But what I'm trying to say is that even relationshipically, you know, if there is such a word, I was a
so
mess.
Amazing.
It was just like I had lost it all, like literally everything. The only thing that I had and that I knew for sure was that I have a child and I am a good mother. That's the only thing I had under my name. Yes, I always had food. I won't lie and say I ever went to bed without eating. I always hustled because that was also the time that even though I had initially wanted to start a marketing and branding company, then I realized that, you know what, I don't have an option of going and living at home. So I will have to make means, even if it's just the bare minimum, just to cover accommodation and things like those. Even if it means I have to go a township in Yohlala in a room. So I had the income, but I just could not sustain the lifestyle that I had before I went to business full time. That is exactly the same time that I then started the domestic worker placement agency. And while I was with my child's father, I've always been a connector, and I I do it without even like in, it's for me, it just happens naturally that somebody will say, I need something. I'm one of those people that always know how to point somebody to the right direction. And when I had a child, I would chat to other mothers saying, you know, I don't have a helper, this and that. And little did I know that my child's father was watching and he felt that I could do this as a business. So I did it. And I don't know what then made me, without planning, without even having like a proper business systems in place. I don't even know who was my first client that paid me for that service, but I started charging people for it. So those little monies would come in handy because then I could buy food, I could buy this, that, and the other that I needed. So those, that was the provision while I was knocking at doors and telling clients that, okay, fine, here's this little newbie advertising and promotions. This is what I can do. You can trust me with your brand and that sort of a thing. So those kept me going. Those 500, I remember when I started, I used to charge 500 rent domestic worker placement. And I eventually then closed that business down because I felt that I was ready to, it was taking me away from what I initially wanted to do. Which was something that I had experience in. And I think when you also, when you start a business without planning and putting systems in place, you can run down the business because that business was just started randomly. There was just no plan. There was just no goal set. There was just, I was just, you know what? I would wake up and I would have auntie calling and saying, I want to register with your agents. And I'd be like, okay, fine, let's just meet at the Vona Valley Shopping Center. We meet. So I just was just running it. And then when a client calls, and then I would, but it got to a point where it grew. I took it for granted.
Yeah, I remember.
I was constantly on the phone. I just could not cope. And one mistake that I made, I always say that was that I made the business all about me. So people knew that when they call, they speak to Nose. As far as Lesotho, Auntie Lesotho would call and say, and they knew that they only knew Nosy. And it became very difficult for me to say, okay, I would get another person to assist me because that plan was not there. So eventually I closed it down. And so
yo, you said so many things. And Mina, I'd like to validate what I heard before we continue. So I want to go back to just to validate what you said about when you were running away with the car and having those palpitations. You know, I talk to a lot of entrepreneurs. Another friend of mine, Polisi Atiena, the trauma was so bad that whenever he would be driving the car that he knows he hasn't paid for 3 months, every time there's a car behind him, a robotine, he would get the worst heart palpitations. So I wanted to talk to the trauma that generally people don't know, the trauma that we go through as struggling entrepreneurs. We are no longer struggling entrepreneurs. I know you are not anymore. But you know, it's a whole thing. And also I want to validate, Uba, you, there was no way, Nosy, you could have known how to put a structure and systems in place with your domestic worker business because survival mode, you didn't know. And so I always say to people, no, don't even curse yourself because you didn't, you couldn't have done it any other way. Right now you could start it again because now you have grown, now you know what works and what doesn't work. But I'm actually happy that you never gave up on Inubia, which we'll talk about towards the end because I want people to know what it is that you do. So I am. Let's say someone is listening to you now, né? And they are face to face with the fact that they might not go back to work because COVID is real. I mean, salaries are being cut down. Just yesterday, I was talking to Spiwe Moyo, someone who works in corporate. Yamazu Spiwe Moyo, Muslim.
Yes, I know him.
So he was telling me how things are going to change and how people need to actually be ready for entrepreneurship or to be mentally prepared to start hustling. What advice do we give them? I'll help you also, but I want to hear your first few thoughts on it. Lifestyle. Let's talk about this lifestyle thing. What should they know about entrepreneurship and lifestyle?
First of all, whatever that you've got. Remember that we socialize with people that we feel ukutibakwi level yetu. The issue here levels is ne class, and you can't help it. It happens everywhere. Mm-hmm. I think for us, it's not so much about losing the material possessions, losing the car, but you also know that you are losing friends that you would ordinarily go to Etasha's Nabo. You know, you're also losing on being invited kuma birthday parties, kuma
baby showers,
you name it.
Yeah,
anything,
you don't just
vacations,
get them away.
You know?
Yeah.
Yes, you know that you're losing out on things like those, because there's gonna come a time when they say, okay, fine, now let's pay so and so the money so that accommodation can be booked, or we're gonna use so and so's car to drive there. So it's the trauma. I mean, just to go back to the example of losing a car, for me, meeting someone and say, oh, do you still drive your BM that you used to drive? It used to just give me that anxiety that now I have to explain why I don't have. And I felt as if people could see through me.
Yeah,
so, because those things are visible and they are used as the measure of success. So it's not just about losing the things, but it's also losing socially as well.
Yeah.
So I mentioned relationships and how I struggle while I was the one thing. Just the everyone, one thing goes wrong, everything else just goes wrong.
Yeah.
That trauma of having to explain to people that you no longer have a car, to this day, to tell you the honest truth, I still live with those panic attacks that, okay, you know what? I once drove a car. I've got precisely the same struggles with your friend that says when there's a car sometimes that follows you and it still comes. It's the trauma that I think you learn to live with it. I remember the one example when I then lost my house. I lived in this, I managed to find a place in this other complex, but I moved to a one bedroom place and I would struggle paying rent. And one of the things that used to give me panic attacks was when my landlord, I had a very nice landlord, but he needed the money and he would call. And when I saw his name on my phone, that would just give me this panic to a point that I only literally stayed for 12 months there. In that 12 months, I struggled to pay him every single month. But when the 12 months ended, I said to myself, I would still love to stay here, but I am letting this go. For my own peace, I am letting this go because I cannot bear the thought of just the sight of his name
people
on my phone. And I was like, you know what? I think some gentleman from Zambia, Cosmas. Yeah, his name was Cosmas.
Yeah, and, that sounds like Zambia.
Yes.
So small,
I just could not bear. Yes, I could not. And I said, you know what? I'm letting go. He was very understanding. And I just did not renew my lease. And then I went through the inconvenience of having to look for another place just so that I do not see his name ever again. So,
you know,
the trauma is real.
I relate to that. With me, it was, remember, I also lost my house. And before I lost my house, that is with the first business, Lay Office Furniture, the one that went under in 2008. Yeah. So before they took the house, you know that the house is generally the last thing. So there were summons of other things, suppliers I couldn't pay, people that I owe. Mm. So to me, it trauma was the knock at the door from the sheriff. So even when years after, when I even moved home and I was in my own place, a knock at the door, you nosy. It's funny that this is the first time. Look, we talk about these things, Nana, but speaking about it here, knowing that, you know, other people are going to listen to it, it's making me feel like, oh my God, we never ever talk about these things. So it took me a long time to get used to people knocking at the door. If only, and let's not even talk. The reason I don't take calls now, it's partly because a phone meant was traumatized. So there's a lot of healing us, especially our generation of entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
But I see the young ones are different, and we'll talk about that. Plus, when you are in the media space, so you're probably seeing different trends with younger entrepreneurs. But our generation, Tina, we need a healing.
And also, the other important thing is, I think because there was so much happening at that time, I just bottled things up. I didn't realize that I needed the healing.
Yeah.
I always thought that, okay, because for me, it's a constant balance between not, emphasizing fear and things like those. And as you know, that I come from a Christian background.
Yeah.
And there are certain things that I was taught, which are good, by the way. There are certain things that I had to unlearn. So that whole thing of, like, for instance, I don't believe that one has to go through difficulties, like hectic things to prove how strong you are.
Yeah.
But equally, I understand that, you know, there's good and bad out of life. There's good and bad in life. And if you can embrace the good, you've got to be able to embrace the bad as well sometimes, because it's for your own good. Yeah. Ultimately, you look back and realize it's for your own good. You asked and you said, okay, there's COVID, there's people's jobs are threatened, and there's people that might be. And I promise you, when it has not happened to you, when you have not gone through the experience of losing something that means so much to you, which is your job that defines you, it seems like it's the worst thing, but it's not the worst thing that can ever happen to you. What I'm trying to say is that going back home because you no longer can afford the house, the rent, giving back that car, it's not as bad as it seems. It may seem like it's the worst thing. You will feel as if and everything, but it's not the worst thing. I promise you, you will actually like see people, they approach and you conclude, yo, I'm sure about tetangam. I was fortunate, I had my struggles, not at home, like I was not, part of me hoped that I was from Joburg and I had an option of going back at home. But I suppose my struggles were different than somebody who had an option of going back home. Take that option, Mtasekhaya. There's nothing wrong. There is nothing wrong with going back, because kiyadlula, and once kudlule, you will actually realize that, you know what, you depressed yourself ngento engekhoyo. I'm sitting with a trauma of, like, you know, many, but some of the traumas that we carry could have been avoided. Yeah. It's not so bad being without a car. And I mean, it's even better these days. There's more Gautrain, there's more Uber and everything. Do your own thing. But you will look at these experiences and you'll realize, good, you know what? They were teaching you certain life lessons. I'll give an example with me. Mina, there's nothing that I would say I'm scared. Yeah, it keeps me awake at night. Even when COVID started, I did worry. I did worry because of the whole process that gets followed, you know, like you being quarantined and everything. But from a business perspective and clients, we had active campaigns, and there were clients that pulled back and said, okay, fine, because we have to close. We have to close our stores, so we cannot continue advertising. But I mean, the fear did not keep me awake at night that I'm going to be without an income, because I had been there and I knew that, okay, fine, it's not going to be that bad. Somehow, it's going to pass and it will be fine. We will be fine. If it means downgrading here and there, it's not the worst thing that can ever happen. So entrepreneurship, in a way, has a way of making you look at things and say, there are very little things that I fear. It deals with the fear because I've been given that opportunity of saying, who am I without anything else around me? So I don't struggle with that. I now know who I am, and I'm not defined by anything that I've got because I know that things come and go. That includes jobs, that includes things that money can buy.
Oh, powerful news. That was very, very powerful. And speaking of moving home or downgrading and all that, it was actually you that said something that I never even saw it that way. When I was still mad in shame, when LPBN was no longer working, I had to leave Eden Vale and go back home for the second time. And you said to me, Lebo, when I... You are so lucky that you actually have a home, and you have a home in Alex, and Alex is in Sandton, and it's closer to things. You can move around. Don't take, this is actually a blessing. That was from you. Yeah. And you even said, you know, had I had a home here, I was not even going to hesitate because you didn't have a home. I mean, you're from Eastern Cape and there was no home to go back to. That changed everything for me because it meant Ubuti. There are people who come from Limpopo or who come from far, and they needed to be in the cities. And I had a home, and I had a mother who was looking after me. Remember my mom, you know,
the biggest
supporter. So yes, you are right. Downgrading is painful when it happens, dear listener. We are not even going to minimize that. But you look back and you will think, yeah, okay, I needed to learn this, I needed to learn that. But for me, entrepreneurship shapes who you are. You know, it's like that thing Yaga J.K. Rowling, the author of Harry Potter, who says failure, because she also failed dismally before the rise of Harry Potter. I think failure is that process of taking away the non-essentials. It leaves you nosy, and you know who you are without the car, without the frills, without the lifestyle. But then you are now a person of character, like you are now.
Yeah.
So yes, we have to talk about the bad things so that you know, not so that you are depressed, guys.
Yes.
So Nozi, right now, my sister, you are in Durban. You left Joburg. Why did you leave Joburg? Let's start there. I know it has nothing to do with entrepreneurship, but why did you leave?
Look, for me, I was born in Eastern Cape, and I think I've always seen myself as a global citizen. I really never had the opportunity of going. I know at some point there was a big thing about, you know, going and working in the UK. I have a friend, actually, Unomhle, that I went to a vet's tech with, and that went and worked in the UK. And I always envied her. But I could not do that. But I am not the type of a person that would be born in a place, grow up, you know, study, work there, marry there, and then be buried. So I was born in Eastern Cape. Yes, I did live in Joburg. I was partly raised by my aunt since the age of like 15 or so, as Braidview. But I wouldn't really say that was home. I've never been able to say I'm a Joburger. It's just for me. Yeah.
But so, in Jalo, Nina, people from Eastern Cape, you love Joburg.
But in Jalo, yes. Joburg, yes. Uzosebenza, we are born in Jalo. So, you know, I could never, you know, I mean, I always get asked by people, Eastern Cape, and they're like, but why? Because you have not lived there since the age of 15, but I just can never identify Ngobangumdu as Eastern Cape, and that's it. And, you know, people laugh at me and say, yo, when you speak Xhosa, you've only just come from Eastern Cape just yesterday. And I've always been like that. Anyway, back to why I moved to Durban. So I stayed in Joburg, and a lot of things happened. You know, I studied there, I started working there, and I would visit. I've been to all the provinces, and for some reason, I just fell in love with Durban. It's the weather. It's got beautiful weather, and it's just good for my soul. There was just something I can't explain. Even when I used to come and visit, you know, waking up in a hotel and just, you know, jog there by the beach and everything. And yes, Zikoni Beach is the Eastern Cape, but I think it was the weather. It just, for me, it was a good place where I could go when I wanted to recharge.
Yeah.
2016, okay. No, actually, I think I always asked myself, okay, fine, if you were not living in Joburg, where else would you live? Then I thought, I've lived in the Eastern Cape and I go there like every December and I go to Luka. So where would be the experience? The which other province? And I couldn't find any other province that made sense for me besides Durban. Looking at all the things that happened, you know, in business and everything, so ngoku ndikwi recovery process, you could, okay, fine. So now I'm that kind of a person that when you really want to make a change, there's got to be like certain things that you do. There are things that you have to physically do. So 2016, okay, my child's father passes on, and then I'm thinking, yeah, okay, fine. There's all a great these things that, I mean, fine, we had broken up, but I knew that I don't have to give him any explanation when I say, you know what, things are bad, I need money, or I need you to just take the child for a couple of days while I sort myself out. So I knew, I've never taken my child to any, what is this thing? Immunization? Yeah. Immunization. I've never like, you know, he did all of that.
Yeah.
So you can imagine get him, his passing, the blow
it was hard.
It was hard. And it was just, I was like, you know what? I didn't mind not being with him. But he was just that kind of a dad that's hands on. Now I literally learned how to be a parent 2016 after he passed on.
Yeah.
And for me, it was like, I need to leave even like Joburg. I could see, you know, I mean, I was now getting, you know, an income. I had a source of income and everything. And I was not doing battling about 2016.
I
was
fine. Remember. Mm.
But I had this thing that says to me, but you need to grow as well. You need to grow. Just go to another province. And it's not easy to grow business in different provinces when you've never lived. You've got to understand the market, you've got to understand the people there and all those things. So I was like, let me just go and try and leave everything that reminds me of this guy. Of course, I think one of the things that I had to do was to grieve for my child, not just for me, but for my child. Forget that I had lost a good friend. To me, he was like, you know, family. It had gotten to that point where it was like family. It was someone that I could call up and say, go and fetch the child because I'm running late for whatever reason. So that I cannot take away from him. So I wouldn't lie and say, I've already dealt with the fact that they're like, oh no, maybe you still wanted him. How can you talk like that and things? I'm over that. I am like so over because I'm not about to justify myself for caring and for acknowledging that I had a good relationship with someone who's already passed on. So anyway, it was a loss and I just wanted to leave this province and everything that reminded me of him. But it was also, okay, let me just see what business opportunities are there. I tried, I did my research and everything, and I didn't have a solid plan when I came to Durban, but I knew somehow, I'm at a point where I had built a business, but I could run it from wherever. Mostly it's meetings, it's presentations and things like those.
Yeah.
So I knew I could not, and it's fortunately or unfortunately with most things, most big decisions I've made in my life is sometimes I have the plan in my head, but I cannot articulate it in words. So yeah. I didn't have a solid plan, but I knew the kinds of things that I wanted to do when I got to Joburg, to Durban. Yeah. And I then came to Durban, found my feet and everything, and I still did my meeting. Some of my clients didn't even know that I was not based in Joburg. So it was just, you know, business as usual. I set up a new team. I set up a new office. Well, I battled, you know, getting nice office spaces and everything, because again, you know, you've got to motivate, you get asked for paperwork and everything, until I came across this office, which is actually an incubation center.
Yeah.
For IT and media.
Yeah.
And in Durban Central. And these things just come when I'm, you know, like as I'm looking. So I knew it. One of the things that entrepreneurship taught me is to trust the process.
Yeah.
I knew that I'm eventually going to be fine. I'm going to be sorted. I didn't know. I didn't know anyone. No one even told me about that office space, but I just got there and I was like, oh, let me just inquire and find out. How do I then get an office here? And I was still doing this traveling, you know, to and from Joburg, but there wasn't much. There wasn't really much. The only thing that I had was just my big printing machines and all of those things. So I knew that, okay, fine, I will continue servicing my Joburg clients, go to meetings like I would as if I was there. Mm-hmm. But it was just really like a change of scenery and experience in a different province. And I've learned so much. I got here as if I grew up here. I I'm a runner. So I found a running club, which then sort of like became family.
Yeah.
It's smaller, the area that I live, it's smaller than your midrands and, you know, those places that I used to stay in, Bovelt, Friend Park and everything. But it's a lovely community, and it's one of those that it's also a nice place to raise a child. I know my son used to, I would ask him when he comes back from school, how was school? It wasn't good. It wasn't bad either. I was thinking, and he was just thinking about his friends. But a year later, he was fine. He had made new friends. He even now he's in grade 7. He even knows which school he wants to go to, which high school he wanted. He's the one that actually guided me, and I knew his first preference. We've applied for high school. He's been accepted. I don't have to go through that online application. I'm not trying to brag to my job, I guess. I don't have to go through that online application and have my child placed at a school near me, that sort of drama. So, yeah.
Yeah, no, the drama of Joburg is tough, guys. The energy of Joburg, as we learn the OR, we use on Jemoyeni with So this is the
hard. We'll be stuck with traffic and getting out of airport, and you're thinking, I've just gotten out of the airport. This just reminds me, Ukuba, why I left. It was just, I think I was tired. It was a place for me to recharge, you know, to recharge and just to take it easy.
Yeah.
I would have gone on a sabbatical, like as in like for long if I could.
But it's not possible.
So for me, Durban gave me that sort of like a holiday. I remember the first year, it felt like I was on holiday. I was so fascinated by the fact that, you know, I literally like chose a place that was next to the beach where I could, even if it's just seeing, I don't go there. So it gave me that holiday feel. It gave me that cleansing that I was being cleansed. I was, you know, like, I reevaluated a lot of things.
Yeah.
I got to think. My mind was much clearer.
Yeah.
But I'm not saying you always have to go through such extremes to experience, but I think it is necessary.
Yeah. No, movement helps, you know, moving from one place to another. It's something that is known even back biblically. When you move, you grow. So Joburg, we needed to go. You know my story. I had to leave. Durban never really spoke to me because I just think if I were to move to Durban, I won't work. Western Cape was my move. So no, because we've gone over an hour. So let's close on a high. I know we don't feel the time. Let's close on a high. What are the benefits of being an entrepreneur? What is the good? Because we've sort of spoken about the bad and the ugly. What are the good, and what are the good in terms of where, not as a human being? I mean, maybe let me start. First of all, Mina, entrepreneurship helps you become truly independent. There's something about working. I know corporate people work hard, and we're not even going to minimize that. People work hard in corporate.
Yeah.
But there is a cushioning, that you will not see until you become an entrepreneur. Entrepreneurship will show you what is actually important. And that's not easy. For an example, we sort of spoke about it. You'll notice, do I really need that PM? I need a smaller car, especially as you're still building.
Yeah.
What I love about entrepreneurship is ownership of your time. But ownership of your time comes with responsibility. Remember, people think that we entrepreneur ulala the whole day. Ah, shame, never.
Yeah. Visitors unlimited.
No. You actually work harder and you develop a different work ethic. Because people think they have a hard work ethic. Granted, no. They have a boss and a deadline. With entrepreneurship, you develop some independence. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, you definitely do. And I think for me, it prepares you. The sooner you start, the better. Because I know that it's not for everyone. There's always been. And we're at a stage where we cannot necessarily talk ill about people who prefer e-employment, you know, as fine singabantu, but for me it works. For the type of a person that I am, the fact that I could pack up and go without having to negotiate for e-transfer internally and wait for a position that was available, and I could work from wherever, for me that's a huge benefit.
Yeah.
And then find a way of still delivering and meeting my client demands, but, you know, at my own pace. Right now, I don't have worry. You know, companies are retrenching, job security. I know that even if I were to do badly, maybe my business were to do badly, I would probably find something that would work, that would give me an income, that sort of a thing. So I've gone through that. I've got plenty of time to find a way of surviving, you know, in life without necessarily depending. So it makes you independent like that, that you don't, there is nothing that you feel like you cannot do. I know a lot of people now are worrying about things like retrenchments or salary cuts and all of those things. Now when e-COVID started, I was like, it's time that I get spared between, and I've had my fair share of difficulties, and I refuse. I just refuse worrying at this time. I've been there, done that. So I am not about to be stressed. I just want to sleep. So the sooner you start, the better, because you find ways of navigating, you know, around. I always thought, you know, when you've got a job, you are secured, you are 100% guaranteed that you will never. But COVID has proven to us that even if you can have a side hustle or something like that, but entrepreneurship teaches you a lot of things. And that's a benefit. You're not gonna stay in a place that is toxic for when you put yourself first, your peace comes first. You get to a point where it's not arrogance, but you know how to eliminate energy that is, you know, things that are not you. You get to a point where you can even turn away business and say, this one is just not for me. And you turn it away and you say, I can't. You can't do that in corporate, because somebody's going to be like, I'm going to speak to your boss. And somebody has stayed there. But there's also the financial benefits that, I mean, as much as it starts and it ends with you, the money is all yours. You get to determine that, okay, fine, this is what you're giving. I always would hear people saying, yeah, so-and-so, you know, the shareholders of the company are making so much money, and then they are not paying employees. You can't even have that conversation. Where were the employees? Where were the employees when you were building, when you were sacrificing? So, I love good things that money can buy. I really love, and I'm unapologetic about that. Yes. When you I can
paid.
Afford
you
them.
Paid your dues,
yes,
man.
I've paid the price. I've paid my dues. And there is no employee on a job description who's been given a job description who's going to tell me that because the company brings in this much and therefore they are entitled to. Yes, I'm fair. I will be fair. And I reward people for their time, for their skill and everything. But I've got to, for all the sacrifices that one makes, I've got to, like, at some point, if I want a handbag or whatever it is, man, like, whatever it is that satisfies me, holiday or whatever, and I shouldn't be worrying and thinking, oh, no, they're going to be thinking that it's money that I could have donated to charity. I'm not about that life, so donate to charity, but I also need to. So there's those benefits, those financial benefits. It may not happen within the first 10 years.
Of course,
I'm not there. I mean, I've not traveled to all the places. Remember, we said we were going to travel this year and COVID happened.
We were going to go to Bangkok.
I haven't traveled to all the places I want to travel to, but I'm here. And one of the things, I mean, that happened when I was going through now moments when I had lost everything, I went through a phase where I started, you know, managing expectations and no, my dreams were shrinking.
Yeah,
but
no,
I bounced back and I went back and I said, you know what? Let me remind myself of why I went to business in the first place. And I had to remind myself that, you know, I still have this, that, and the other. And I can still, the dreams that I had, some of the things that I had scratched out of my list, I had to then bring them back because I realized that, no, that negativity that I was talking was because of the phase that I was going through. But now that I have recovered, I can still dream of that house and everything. Let me not let the trauma of her build in a rural area, you know, because I'm scared of taking a bond and things like those. If there is a way of buying the house for cash, I'm not going to be holding on to money. If I'm holding on to money because I don't ever want to lose it again. No,
that we don't. There are no entrepreneurs. We are not like that.
Know what you have not recovered if you are
still thinking small.
Learn from the mistakes. And I mean, yes, only take whatever that you can afford at that particular time. But don't stop dreaming big. Don't stop dreaming big just because you had a bad experience at 30. Maybe you lost a car, you lost your house or something like that. It's not the end of the world. Like I said, the benefit for me was also that I started like very early. And I used to say to my family, okay, if this does not work, then I can always go out to the CV and I'll go and look for a job. So that's a good thing about starting early because you are still employable. You can still go back to a corporate and say, "Hi, Kubike guys," and talk to people that you know in your industry. But at least you tried.
Yeah. No, the benefits are high. Money, we're going to make money. I mean, who makes money in the world? It's generally people who start businesses. So that's not even a question, which is why I never talk about money, because I know we will make it. If you have a good product and a good service and a good business and you've built it, because Nubia is 10 years old now. Can you believe Nubia is 10 years old?
Yeah.
So money is just, I mean, it's a question of when, really, and it has sort of started. So Nozi, how someone is listening to you, they want to know, what do you really do in really, really brief bullet points, because I'm going to put all your details on our show notes. What do you do all every day? What's your job?
Okay, my job entails dealing with marketing and brand managers in different corporates. And what I sell to them is advertising, both on radio and e-digital. So advertising on its own is broad. There is, like, you know, the idea, coming up with an idea. And then once you've come up with an idea, you record. There's things like the ads that you hear on radio, which is I would call that production, because whether it's going to go to digital or it's going to go to radio, there has to be material that is planned. And it's that whole process of getting a product
a client's product to the ears or the eyes of the consumer. Yeah, in a nutshell, that's what I do. Yeah. That's what Inubia Advertising and Promotion does. And then I also have a Tribes cosmetics brand.
Yeah.
I know you didn't ask me about it, but it's something very close to my heart.
And I know.
I do that because it also like what I like about it is that it's got e-training, it's got that developmental
aspect
in it. Yeah, yes, it's got the developing of others and everything. I mean, I love seeing people selling for themselves when you're looking for that extra income. We make the body lotions, we make the perfumes and things like those, and then I sell them to people that resell.
Yeah And you also are sort of starting exhibition. Remember, you work with authors and artists as well.
So there's
a lot. You are an entrepreneur, so you like me.
So that's I think for me that's part of like the promotions. I mean, the whole company is Nubia Advertising and Promotions. If you look at advertising, or rather marketing, it's got sales, it's got branding, it's got advertising. So it's all part of that. So it's got eventing as well. But remember, eventing is also about getting the product in front of the consumer. So the events that I do, I don't do just any events. I do events that are close to my heart, that I know that they are meaningful. I would get authors together to promote, to exhibit their books, to talk about their books, to share their struggles and things like those, and also to connect them with people that have got like different skills. If other people maybe can sell the books. So it's that whole, it's all connected. All the things that I do, I actually connected. But let me not use I, because I'm always very reluctant of using I work with teams of people. I've got people that I work with on a full-time basis. I've got people that I just call on like on a freelance basis, What I avoid doing is a situation where it's like, if I'm not available for whatever reason, then it's like, hi, Ndifuna unozi, because, you know, she's the owner of the business. And realistically, that causes entrepreneurs to burn out. That whole thing of wanting to earn and everything.
Yeah.
If I give info at Nubia, one of my team members will just respond. It may not be Unozi. It may be someone else. It may be Usindi. It may be Ukolile or whoever. So don't be alarmed. But they are trained. I mean, there's a company culture. What you would get from me is also what you would get. And it's one of the things that I learned, because it's tempting to say you want to just be the center of attraction and everything, but it's not sustainable and it doesn't grow business.
No, it doesn't. You know, you're growing when you have people. You know, I have Utuli, I have Tsulu now, I have Tebo. Yeah. And it's, for some people, it's hard to adjust to Uti, how I emailed you. I don't know that you emailed me, because info doesn't come to me. Yeah. So people find it hard to adjust to Uti. So we can't actually access you directly. Like, no, we have grown.
Yeah.
No, my sister, this was better than I thought it would be. It was a conversation that was necessary. And I thank you. And I'm very, very proud of you. We are going to go on that trip to Thailand after COVID. We are. We have to go to Bangkok. Sisbo, Nyeman, you know, because we've paid for this. We are Batalele success. And you're going places. You know what I need from you before you go? You know that I'm on alcohol-free mode right now. I have this dream. Mamel, I have this dream. This dream of being... Listen, no, I get you. When your relationship with wine is different. Mine is traumatic. So I want to, if you can, because when you work with brands, I want to be a brand ambassador of a non-alcoholic champagne. Can you make me an influencer?
Oh, non-alcoholic,
You can buy influencer. If you can find me a brand.
sense. Okay, how long have you been? How long have you been? I don't want to say clean because I can look at
No, I'm just so curious. It's 100 days. Yeah. I'm so curious. I really don't want to drink wine the way I used to drink it. And just to make people not think I was a drunk, I wasn't. I just did not like the fact that every Thursday I have to have a glass of wine. It was bugging me.
Yeah. Look, Lebo, I think you know what? We all use different things. I know of people who have decided to babazoba celebrate. There's people that have decided that it's part of growth. You know, we grow in is it different.
Yeah.
For me, it was the move. You know, I've already talked about how the move helped me grow and everything. So some of these things are a symbol to maybe like a chapter that you are closing and then, you know, preparing you for a chapter angel that you are opening.
You actually went deeper than I thought you would. Yes, I think my body is rejecting alcohol because I'm getting deeper into my healing work and teaching work, the work that you know. Is, I mean, you work with stretch as well. You send a lama channel, so you know what I do. So yeah, I think it's the next. I can't get to the next level of teaching and going deeper while I still have to deal with hangovers. I can't. I'm not those people.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's end. Let's end this. Then we can talk offline. Thank you, Nozi, for your time. Let's do it professionally.
Now that was my friend Nozi, and I hope this was inspirational as it was to me. Because it was she's a deeply inspiring woman. She's a brave girl. I'm very happy for her and extremely proud that she made it to 10 years. Because it takes a certain kind of person to stomach it out like that. Like I said, entrepreneurship is very different to corporate. Very, very different. We are not judging here, but it is a fact. It's quite hard, and for you to go over 5 years is a milestone. 10 years, as you know, if you've listened to my some of my old solo podcasts, there's a concept called the power of 10 that I think I spoke about on one or two of the podcasts. One day I'll talk about the power of 10. I forgot this is an outro. This is not, you know, me just giving lessons. The power of 10, one day I'll tell you about it. Or you can just always go back really to my old podcasts and listen to them, my solo ones, especially you who are craving them. Hey, lo namara, guys. Le spoiled. But yeah, that was my friend. Do share with us on a voice note your thoughts and what you felt. And give her some love, you know, give my guests some love, because that makes me happy. That makes me happy. Ask them questions. Like I said in the intro, if you have a question to a particular guest, I can send them the question and they can then record the response and then we can play it here for you, you know, so that it becomes this big, interesting podcast, you know, because the podcast, you know. You find that you listen to one, you've listened to them all. So let's just give it that stretch, Juge. Let's give it that stretchness, you know, our podcast. And yeah, I will see you next week with another episode of the Stretch Podcast. For now, I just want to wish you love and all green lights. Always, 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 always.
Thank you. And see you again next week for another episode of the Stretch Podcast.